What can we learn from our Lutheran forefathers on how to face the challenges of a culture openly hostile to Christianity? Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, has written a column for the Latest Issues Etc. journal titled For Such a Time as This. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. You'll also find Pastor Will Whedon's article on the monthly Psalter, the free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org. Race is an idea that is not based in any science or biology. It certainly isn't a biblical idea. We are all one blood from one man. So, where did the idea of race come from? Now, don't get me wrong. There have been efforts on the part of bad actors to divide the human race and communities along all kinds of lines. But I think we can actually trace where the idea that line should be race to, well, among other things, Darwinism. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about Darwinism and racism, Josh Pauling. He's a classical educator, head elder at All Saints Lutheran Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, a columnist for Modern Reformation and Salvo, and he's author of a recent column titled Down with Racism, Down with Darwinism Too. Josh, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Todd. It's a privilege.
How would you describe the recent calls from the left to, quote, decolonize the curriculum of our educational institutions?
Yeah, this is a term that's being used really at a primary level, secondary level, and the university level. And at first, sometimes it might just seem like the latest iteration of that old chant of, hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civ has got to go, right? That's been around since the 80s or even older than that. Sometimes it just seems like that, but really the targets are more foundational now. That older chant of getting rid of Western civ really had to do with the humanities, right? Western civilization, our cultural heritage. But now what's really in the crosshairs are concepts like rationality, the scientific method. Things much more basic now are deemed by many as oppressive or racist concepts that are used to control marginalized groups.
How does the attempt to politicize science, technology, engineering, and math, the STEM side of education, and open a Pandora's box?
Yeah, it's really staggering to think about it, that we're at a point where the elites, the ones with all the degrees and so forth, are willing to question such foundational concepts. And if we think about that, if we're going to really start to question mathematical laws, the scientific method, principles of physics, and so forth, just practically speaking, how are we going to build things? If we're questioning the principles that are required to be a good engineer, we're not going to have bridges that stand and buildings that stand in the long run. And this is really concerning. A recent example of this that Steven Pinker got a hold of involves the scientific journal Nature, Human Behavior. And Pinker's a fascinating guy. He's a cognitive scientist at Harvard. He's by no means a conservative, but he's willing to engage with a variety of ideas. He's frequently in debates with people from different perspectives and so forth. He's written a lot of books, very insightful thinker. But even he, as someone who's not a conservative, is very concerned about this. And he actually exposed some of the documents from Nature Human Behavior in their new editorial standards, what they're looking for in articles. And it really reveals an ideological capture of that journal. And his question was, how are we going to trust this journal? How are we going to trust the scientific findings of this journal when its editorial standards are so ideologically captured? Right. So I think that's really the concern here. It's a whole new level of what's being attacked.
What did Darwin contribute to science's move toward evolutionary models? You say it was already underway and Darwin added something.
Sure. Yeah. So the mood of science in the mid-1800s was one of evolution and progress, of unfolding, and also in the realm of history. History was also being viewed as a sort of a progress narrative. This was what historians call the Whig view of history, W-H-I-G. And so both in science and in history, and also society in general, with all of the inventions of the industrial age, all of those things put before our eyes a sort of a march of progress. And what Darwin did is he really honed in on a mechanism for it, namely natural selection. And the historian Jacques Barzin, who I utilize in the piece, really has a lot of helpful quotes and insights into this. He's a fascinating historian of the last 100 years, I think one of the best of the last 100 years, who has just a great grasp of the flow of history. And that's really what he hones in on here, is that Darwin comes up with a mechanism for this evolutionary progress, and that is natural selection.
So how was Darwin's term, it's actually the subtitle of his great work, how is his term favored races taken up by other scientists at the time toward really racist ends?
Right. Yeah. So the subtitle of his book, let's just do the whole title. So the famous title is The Origin of Species, but the whole title goes like this: On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection, or The Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. Right. Now, it is true that when he's using the term races there, he's really referring to species. He's not referring to human groups. But what people did is they used that phrase, they latched on to that phrase, and then were referring to varieties of men, right? Human races. And that's really where we start to see a danger emerge, even more so than just with Darwinism, as it comes to be applied to human society as well.
How did the acceptance science of the day already divide humanity into distinct races?
So in the 19th century, this was really what Barzin calls the heyday of physical anthropology. And what we mean by that is that we were looking at physical characteristics of human groups across the globe and trying to make those into significant things that really marked human races as separate from one another. There was a lot of skull measurements going on. There were a lot of nose measurements, all sorts of physical characteristics that were used to then sort of place human beings in a hierarchy. Right? And that's extremely dangerous. But that's what was happening. And it was viewed as science at the time, right? This was the sort of enlightened scientific position to hold at the time.
How did Darwinism then contribute to racist thinking in America?
Right. So as Darwin's ideas of survival of the fittest, natural selection start to percolate through society, as others start to apply that then to human groups and human cultures, it really becomes such an easy, convenient justification for racial prejudice and racial ways of thinking. So what really happens is as Darwinism swept through science and academia and society, and again, this is in the late 19th, early 20th centuries, right? What happens is now racism can sort of become more acceptable. It's like it gets cloaked in the scientist's lab coat. So now Darwinism lent an air of respectability to racism that then contributed to its further entrenchment and also its increased public display because it was seen as the enlightened elite position to hold.
Was racism actively promoted under the guise of Darwinist science?
Yes, most definitely. We could give a lot of examples of this in American history and global history. It became a justification for imperialism in other parts of the world. It became part of Nazism in the treatment of minority groups there. And it really, as it became adapted into the idea of social Darwinism, was actively promoted as a way to justify the segregation of society, a way to support eugenics. And one of the major figures here is Herbert Spencer. When we go from Darwinism to then social Darwinism, Spencer is the one who coins that term. And he actually is also the one who coined the term survival of the fittest. That's a Spencer term. And Spencer really plays a key role in applying Darwin's ideas to human cultures, human groups, and societies. That not only are these principles working in the natural world, they're also working in the human world. So we get the dog-eat-dog mindset, right? Everybody out for themselves. And this leads to a lot of racism in society in this era. It leads to also a lot of cutthroat business practices of the era. Social Darwinism went hand in hand with a lot of the extreme industrialism of the time, and also around the world in forms of imperialism. Now, I think it's also important to note, as I've mentioned, that this really was considered the progressive position to hold. This was considered the scientific position to hold. And that's interesting to consider today when we might compare it to other views that the elites hold or the educated tend to hold that don't actually line up with reality, whether we're talking about in the realm of race or in the realm of gender identity.
Talk about this kind of Darwinist and then the sidecar of racism that came with it, how it influenced figures like Margaret Sanger, who had very outspoken eugenics goals in promoting both contraception and abortion.
Absolutely. There's a perfect test case of what happened, right? Sanger utilized the ideas of social Darwinism to promote a eugenics plan to eliminate unfavored races, and especially African Americans, right? That's a very clear example of the types of things that happened during this era.
You quote, and you have mentioned him, Jacques Barzun, calling the concept of race a modern superstition. What did he mean by that?
Yeah, to me, this is just so prophetic. He wrote a book in 1937 entitled Race, A Study in Superstition. Now, let's think about that. 1937, right? That's right after World War I, right before World War II. Think about all the things that are going on in society at the time. We have eugenics. We have social Darwinism. We have imperialism. We have Nazism on the rise in Europe. We have Jim Crow segregation in the United States. And here he is saying that the whole system is a superstition, that race itself is a superstition. He's a fascinating historian, one of my favorites. He had a long, prolific career. He wrote books, published books in 8 decades of his life, all the way from the early 1900s until his final book around the year 2000. So what a career. But what he was getting at with this idea of race being a superstition is that it's not based on actual scientific evidence. It's really, in his view, a social construct, a convenient theorizing that justified our preconceived notions based on stereotypes and so forth. And he also, in his book, he calls race thinking a habit, right? And I think this term is very key today to rediscover and start to reuse. I think sometimes in our debates about CRT, which are very important, that there's so much baggage associated with that term that it sends people immediately into their opposing camps, and we don't actually engage in the root causes and root problems. Using a term like race thinking can cut through all of that, right? Because race thinking gets rid of all the baggage, right, of right or left, and gets really to the root of the issue. When we look at human beings through a racial lens, that is the problem. So race thinking, I think that's a term to recover.
You mentioned CRT, critical race theory. How do woke ideology, critical race theory, and identity politics reinforce the false idea of race?
They really double down on racial categories, don't they? It's really a fronting of race as primary to one's identity. And I think that's really the root of the problem, the race thinking that Barzun captured almost 100 years ago now. Now, I do want to be clear that eliminating racism is something that all members of society should pursue as we honestly reckon with its real legacy, right? Racism is a real thing, historically and in the present. And in our attempts to critique CRT and fight against it, we don't want to dismiss real aspects of our own history or real aspects of our own present. I think that's very important to note, right? We do want to be a bit nuanced and allow for the complexity of all of this, right? But the funny thing with CRT and race thinking is it tries to solve the problem of racism by making everybody more aware of race at all times and places. And that's really going to just awaken the worst in our nature. So this doubling down on racialism or race thinking is not the solution.
Have those who have accepted the concept of race unwittingly bought into a Darwinist concept of man? Can the two be separated?
That's a good question. I think here we do have to be careful not to commit any of the logical fallacies about sort of ad hominem attacks or genetic fallacies and a whole series of others. But at the very least, it is suggestive that when these ideas were gaining prominence, as they began to be applied to human groups, that we do see a rise of insidious forms of racism and very public forms of it as well. And that should at least give us pause when we think about Darwinism as a system. And I think also it reminds us that in this decolonization project, there is a little bit of a grain of truth right there, right? decolonization in the realm of science is trying to uncover some of those pseudoscientific forms of racism or racial hierarchy from the past. What I think we can do is also connect that somewhat to Darwinism to show that maybe we also should be rethinking the Darwinist paradigm, right? Because as a paradigm, the scientific materialism behind Darwinian evolution destroys really any sense of order, purpose, or meaning. And when the special creation of man in the image of God is replaced with materialist origin stories, right, then we lose the uniqueness of human morality and the universal value of all human beings starts to deteriorate. So I think that really is something that we need to think about there. And in another area too, not connected to race, but definitely connected to the sort of woke identity politics era that we're in, and that's in relation to sexuality and gender identity, right? Think about this as well in relation to Darwinism. As if we are just animals with urges and sexual instincts, then why not act those out, right? So this also goes hand in hand when we see the crumbling of traditional sexual codes and mores, again, justified by the so-called enlightened views of human origins and evolutionary principles.
What does the Bible teach about the nature of man's interrelatedness?
We can go right to the first few chapters, can't we? Right? The Imago Dei. That's where we begin. And I think here we can look to our own past when it comes to fighting against racism. If we were to look at the abolitionist movement, the civil rights movement, and many others in human history, those are really Imago Dei movements, right? What gave them such profundity and power was the reality that they were grounding human beings in the universal story of being created in the image of God, right? That's what made them persuasive to people. So we need to return to the Imago Dei. And I think also today, as Christians being remade in baptism, united to Christ, we also then are brought into the family of God in a way that transcends racial categories, that transcends sexual preference, and so forth. We know that in the last day, when we reach the wedding feast of the Lamb, that there will be saints from every tribe, tongue, and nation. And what a beautiful thing that will be.
Do you expect the decolonized movement to notice the Darwin racism connection?
That's a good question. If we look at some of the articles in National Geographic or Scientific American in the last few years, there has been a lot of articles about the pseudoscience of racial hierarchy and scientific racism. So I think they are connecting some dots, but frequently what happens is Darwin sort of gets a free pass. There's not a lot of digging into his own works and writings, like, for example, his 1871 work, The Descent of Man, where he himself talks about race and hierarchy when it comes to human groups. So I think it is a little bit interesting to see how a lot of times, while scientific racism is being critiqued, they're not going further to what could be the root cause itself. They sort of give Darwinism a free pass.
Josh Pauling is a classical educator. He's head elder at All Saints Lutheran Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, a columnist for Modern Reformation and Salvo, and author of a recent column titled Down with Racism, Down with Darwinism, Too. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Josh, thanks.
Thank you, Todd.
Pastor Ted Geese joins us on the other side. We're going to be reviewing the TV series Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, and why so many of its potential fans don't really like it. Out of the grind, we're destined to be Darwin's children this time. The ribbons of a cigarette. God's Song of Deliverance is your song too. Dive into the Book of Exodus with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, Deliver Us, God's Rescue Story in Exodus. It's written by Issues Etc. guest Dr. Reed Lessing. Find out more about Deliver Us at our website, issuesetc.org, or by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Deliver Us, God's Rescue Story in Exodus, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September.
Not everyone is comfortable with new technology. Dial A Podcast gives all generations of your congregation an easy way to hear your sermons, or even devotionals and Bible studies. Once you've completed a simple one-time setup, we take care of the rest. All your congregants have to do is dial the number from any phone to listen to your latest podcast, all at no additional cost to them. Dial A Podcast. Extend the reach of your sermons. Get started at dialapodcast.com now.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.